It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
President Obama says financially stable Ukraine would influence Russia. Bad weather delays MH370 search. I'm Bill Michaels reporting from Washington. U.S. President Barack Obama says ensuring Ukraine is financially stable is an important way to influence Russian decision making.
As NATO allies, the United States and Italy are going to uphold our solemn obligation to the security of our allies. As G7 partners, our decision to move ahead with our summit in Brussels without Russia is an example, a signal of Russia's growing isolation. The sanctions that the United States and the European Union have imposed will continue to grow if Russia doesn't change course. But as I said yesterday in Brussels, we are continually hopeful that Russia walks through the door of diplomacy. And works with all of us to try to resolve this issue in a peaceful way.
Mr. Obama spoke in Rome Thursday after the International Monetary Fund pledged $18 billion in loans to Ukraine and the U.S. Congress approved another $1 billion. Following talks with Italian leaders, Mr. Obama said the United States and Europe are going to have to put a lot of resources and effort into Ukraine. The IMF loans come with a requirement for Ukraine to carry out tough economic reforms. Meanwhile, the head of Ukraine's National Security Council says Russia has close to 100,000 troops along Ukraine's borders in the north, south, and east. President Obama visits Saudi Arabia today for summit talks with King Abdullah on differences over security interests across the Middle East. Scott Bobb has more.
President Obama's visit to Saudi Arabia comes amid growing strains in relations with the United States and rifts among Middle Eastern nations due to the widening conflict in Syria. A U.S. diplomat based in Saudi Arabia said the trip was aimed at advancing what was termed a range of common security-related interests, including the situation in Iran and Syria, talks between Israel and the Palestinians, and the effort to counter violent extremism. The Saudi-based Al Arabiya Network said results of the Obama-Abdullah talks could boost stability and prosperity throughout the region. Scott Bobb, VOA News, Jerusalem.
Thai satellite photos have revealed more possible debris from the missing Malaysian jetliner, but the search for the plane was again delayed because of bad weather. The Thai Space Agency said Thursday one of its satellites spotted about 300 floating objects ranging from 2 to 15 meters in size in the remote southern Indian Ocean. The news comes after 122 possible objects, some of them shiny and up to 23 meters long, were seen in French satellite photos near the same area. Efforts to reach the debris have so far been unsuccessful. The Australian Maritime Safety Authority said Thursday poor conditions forced all search planes to leave the region. It said ships will continue searching. In a statement on Twitter Thursday evening, Australia time, the authority said it expects the bad weather to continue for 24 hours. Tensions continue to escalate on the Korean Peninsula, with both sides trading allegations and South Korea seizing a North Korean fishing boat that strayed into its waters. The South Korean military Thursday said the ship sailed nearly 2 kilometers south of the maritime border and refused warnings to return to the north. The three crew members have been taken into custody while officials in Seoul conduct an investigation. Officials say the men do not appear to be trying to defect and want to go home. The U.S. economy grew slightly faster than first thought to end last year. The Commerce Department reported Thursday the American economy, the world's largest, advanced 2.6% in the October to December period, up from an earlier estimate of 2.4%. The agency said consumer spending, which accounts for 70% of the U.S. economy, rose at its fastest pace in 3 years. And the death toll is already 25 from a devastating U.S. mudslide, but a rescue leader says the number of victims is likely to soon increase substantially. For more on these stories and a complete look at today's news, be sure to visit our website at voanews.com. Reporting from Washington, I'm Bill Michaels, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, March 28th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. West African leaders begin a two-day summit in Ivory Coast today, Friday.
Whatever decision comes out of the summit, we can be sure that it will be to the best interest of the region and the best interest of the member states.
Sonny Ugo is the communications director for the Economic Community of West African States. Oil theft dilemmas times Nigeria's Niger Delta region. Kenya, like Rwanda, is trying to overcome ethnic violence. The U.S. calls for a vote free of intimidation in Egypt following El-Sisi's announcement. And South Sudan women are called upon to join the ongoing peace process.
Women have contributed immensely to bringing about understanding, to bringing about peace. And so what we are saying is, look, women, you have power within yourself to be able to speak to these men, particularly the majority of fighters are your children.
Reverend Bernard Oliyasuwa is Secretary General of the Committee for the National Healing, Peace and Reconciliation in South Sudan. And U.S. President Barack Obama meets Pope Francis. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. West African heads of state and government begin a two-day summit today, Friday, in the Ivory Coast political capital of Yamoussoukro. Sonny Ugo, communications director for the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, says high on the agenda will be the election of a new ECOWAS chairperson to take over the organization's leadership from Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara, whose term expires later this year. Ugo tells reporter Peter Clotty, West African leaders will also address concerns that the free trade agreement with the European Union is unfair towards ECOWAS member states.
A variety of things on their plate. One, the economic partnership agreement that we have been discussing with the EU to create a free trade area for both regions that has been going on for 10 to 12 years. Two, the issue of maritime security. Three, the election of a new chairman to replace President Ouattara, who will be handing over after two consecutive years in office, after a very fruitful, illustrious, and successful leadership of the community.
Some West Africans have expressed concern that the EU-West African agreement might not necessarily be beneficial to member countries in the area as well as their citizens.
There's a recommendation that came that originated from the Regional Life Party. Regional experts and their counterparts from the EU, and which has moved on to different levels at the level of the community, the level of the Ministerial Monitoring Committee, which has direct responsibility for that process, and which has moved on to the Council of Ministers, and the recommendation is coming to the heads of state for consideration. Understandably, the discussions have been, because they have been protracted, there have been a variety of perspectives. But I can assure you that negotiations that are going on the basis of the assessment of what is best for member states, because member states are active in the process, and they know what is best for them. And whatever decision comes out of the summit, we can be sure that it will be to the best interest of the region and the best interest of the member states.
Will the issue of the election in Guinea-Bissau be discussed by these leaders?
Part of a review of the security situation in the region, the ongoing process that for elections in Guinea-Bissau next month will also be discussed to see how that will go on. If you recall, last year at the extraordinary summit of regional leaders, member states in Dakar, member states pledged some 20 million or so, of which 14 or so have been redeemed to support Guinea-Bissau to make sure that they have an election that is transparent, that is free and fair, that meet the standards for our democratic governance, and that will enable the Guinea-Bissau to turn a new leaf in the process of ensuring stable governance in their country.
Sonny Ugo is communications director for ECOWAS. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from Ivory Coast, political capital of Yamoussoukro. Officials in Nigeria's Niger Delta region have burned down hundreds of private oil refineries in recent months on the grounds they are illegal. Some activists are calling for legalization of these refineries, which currently sell black market fuel. But as Heather Murda reports for VOA from Abuja, critics say legitimizing theft will only compound Nigeria's problems of chronic fuel shortages and general impunity. Hey, hey, hey.
There's a long-standing dilemma in Nigeria's oil-rich Niger Delta region. The people are desperately poor and blame the oil companies for polluting their land and fishing waters. As a result, many folks steal oil from pipelines and refine it in barrels along the creeks. That, in turn, further pollutes the environment. The government is caught in the middle, unable or unwilling to completely stop the black market oil trade, but burning down illegal refineries by the hundreds. When the fires die, the refineries are rebuilt. Edward Oforoma, a lawyer and former police superintendent.
We have been reading every day that they have been destroying the refinery. And they come back. If they come back after destruction, what do you infer from that?
He says the only way to end this cycle is to legalize and regulate what is now a vibrant black market oil business.
Is it not a vicious circle? We are just going around the periphery of the whole issue. Solve it by legalizing them, licensing them, so that they will be able to contribute to the coffers of the government.
He says if the practice were legal, small-time refiners would purchase crude oil from the government refineries, which only refine half the oil they are allotted. Activists say they have asked the government to set up a legal framework for small-time refiners, but have gotten no response. Some observers say that the problem with this plan is that people will not buy crude oil when they can tap into the pipes for free. The Nigerian government says it loses as much as $1 billion a month to oil theft. This is Wole Olooya, a columnist for the Nigerian newspaper, The Daily Trust.
Stealing is wrong. These guys breach the pipes, they steal the products, and they start refining goods locally. There is no environmental impact assessment done, nothing done.
He says any move to regularize the black market oil trade would contribute to another larger problem Nigeria faces, impunity. Analysts and officials across the country complain that many crimes in Nigeria go unpunished, fueling insurgency in the north and instability in the Niger Delta. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Abuja.
Dozens of South Sudan women attending a peace symposium in Juba on Thursday said they will tell their husbands and sons to stop fighting. They also plan to meet with people in displacement camps to encourage them to move back to their homes. Mugumi Davis Rokaringi attended the first day of the meeting and has this story for VOA.
Agnes Wasuk Sarafina says she does not understand why the fighting started in South Sudan. But the women's leader in the South Sudan Council of Churches says she is willing to do whatever it takes to make sure it stops.
What I've seen, the killing that had happened, please, as a mother, it brings back my labor. You know, when I was at the state of delivery, it is like now when I see our children, our sons, our husbands just dying senselessly, it pains us.
Sarafina was one of more than 50 women leaders from around the country who attended the first day of the symposium, which was organized by the Committee of National Healing, Peace and Reconciliation. Committee Secretary General Reverend Bernard Oliasua says committee members are encouraging women to take the lead in bringing peace back to South Sudan.
Even in our history, women have contributed immensely to bringing about understanding, to bringing about peace. And so what we are saying is, look, women, you have power within yourself to be able to speak to these men, particularly the majority of fighters are your children. And so we want to empower them to be able to say, look, we do not want this senseless war.
The organizers are working with women to fine-tune a message of peace to be spread within their communities. Peter Jacqueline, a member of the National Women's Entrepreneur Association, says she will tell others both inside and outside of her village that there will be a stronger people united rather than divided.
One message I have very strongly to our citizen is, with tears, the issue of tribalism. When somebody asks me, please, Jacqueline, where did you come from? I tell them simply, I'm an African. Because you can see my skin here is black, why else do you want to know where I come from? If I can go further than that, I will tell you I'm South Sudanese, and I want everybody to have that love for his or her country.
Jacqueline says she plans to take this message to the displacement camps in her area and meet with members of other ethnic groups. Reverend Sua says he hopes Jacqueline and others like her will press government and opposition leaders to hammer out a comprehensive peace deal in Addis Ababa.
Reconciliation belongs to the people. Reconciliation process needs to take into account the realities on the ground.
Suwa says the committee is open to any ideas on how to bring lasting peace to the country. For VOA News, I am Gumedev Surakarinj in Juba.
And you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is the 25th day of March. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. Each April, Rwanda and some other African countries pay homage to victims of the 1994 Rwanda genocide. Those countries include Kenya, which has also had its share of political volatility and inter-tribal fighting, especially after the 2007 presidential election. Since then, Kenya has made progress in building credible government institutions. But as Mohamed Yusuf reports for VOA, some analysts and activists are warning those gains are fragile.
Kenya's disputed presidential election in 2007 revealed how dangerous ethnic divisions and corruption can be to the country's citizens. Since then, the international community has pushed the country's leaders to implement political, police and judicial reforms in order to avoid a return to violence. Political analyst Adam Olo, a lecturer at the University of Nairobi, says Kenya must learn how to let institutions work without interference.
Kenya has also had its own lessons of the 2007-2008 post-election violence. And I think that what Kenya needs to learn is that basically institutions should work for the good of the country. I think Kenya did very well by coming up with a new constitution.
In 2010, more than 60% of voters approved a new Kenyan constitution to replace one that many saw as causing institutional weakness, in effect enabling the violence. The new constitution created a Supreme Court and set new procedures for appointing top officials in the government like judges and police. Late in 2012, a survey showed more than 80% of Kenyans had confidence in the courts. This confidence prompted the losing presidential candidate in that year's election, former Prime Minister Raila Odinga, to challenge the result in the Supreme Court, rather than calling for mass protest. The head of the group Inuka All Stand Up Kenya is John Githongo. He says some politicians are fighting the recent changes and warns the recent gains for democracy and rule of law could be erased.
The most important instrument for peace and continued and harmonious life in Kenya is the constitution. And one of the disturbing things that we're seeing is very determined efforts to roll back some of the victories that have been won as a result of the new constitution.
Githonga says the constitution is the primary instrument for holding his countrymen together in a peaceful future. Political analyst Olo says if people lose faith in the new institutions, the country may witness violence.
To the extent that people lose confidence in the institutions that are supposed to ensure harmony or to pretend of conflictual issues or dispute resolution.
President Uhuru Kenyatta and Deputy William Ruto are facing charges at the International Criminal Court. They helped to orchestrate the post-election violence, but the case against Mr. Kenyatta is on the verge of falling apart. Mohamed Yusuf of VOA News, Nairobi.
Egyptian General Abdel Fattah el-Sisi's decision to run for president comes as the United States is pushing Cairo to improve its treatment of journalists and political opponents. VOA State Department correspondent Cass Stearns reports on what the decision means for an Obama administration that is trying to balance support for Egyptian democracy with security concerns in Saudi Arabia.
The former general's candidacy has been expected for months, so U.S. officials say they're focusing now on the freedom of Egypt's electoral process. Deputy State Department spokeswoman Marie Harf.
It is up to the people of Egypt to determine their future. And we have also repeatedly said that as the people of Egypt go to the polls to do that, it must be in a climate that's free from intimidation, where people feel they can vote for and support whatever party and whatever candidate they want to. And we have raised concerns with the interim Egyptian government about the ability for citizens to freely express their opinions.
Especially as most of the recent U.S. human rights concerns followed El-Sisi's toppling of Egypt's first democratically elected government, leaving Washington in what former U.S. Ambassador Adam Arely calls an awkward position.
I mean, the good side, they're running things. The bad side is they're repressing a lot of dissent. And not necessarily disloyal dissent, but any dissent. That bothers President Obama and his administration. It really does.
Concerns not shared by Washington's Arabian allies who opposed the Muslim Brotherhood ousted in El-Sisi's coup.
Saudi Arabia and the UAE, quite frankly, I think you're going to have to agree to disagree on Egypt. Saudi Arabia and the UAE are backing Sisi and his and the current government in Egypt to the hilt, because they see the alternative as chaos.
But it's Egyptian security forces that are most likely to spread chaos in an uncertain political environment, says American University professor Hilary Mann Leverett.
It is the torturing, the imprisoning, the complete suppression. We may even see the public execution of Muslim Brotherhood leaders. That is something that will just radicalize the Muslim Brotherhood in a way that happened in previous presidencies in Egypt under Nasser and Sadat, where you also had the precursors of Al-Qaeda.
Threats that she says cannot be resolved by joining Saudi backing for General Sisi.
The idea that we can work with Saudi Arabia in Egypt to suppress popular views, popular dissent, is a recipe for disaster.
Deepening Washington's divide with Riyadh is the war in Syria, where Saudi Arabia wants the United States to take a more active role backing rebels fighting the government in Damascus. Following his meetings here in Italy, President Obama travels to Saudi Arabia, where he and Secretary of State John Kerry are meeting with King Abdullah. Items of concern include democracy in Egypt, war in Syria, efforts to contain Iran's nuclear program, and Israeli-Palestinian peace talks. Scott Stearns, VOA News, Rome.
President Barack Obama and Pope Francis have met for the first time at the Vatican. VOA White House correspondent Luis Ramirez is traveling with the president and reports from the Holy See.
President Barack Obama sat down with Pope Francis in the Vatican's Papal Library for a nearly one-hour conversation that began in a warm atmosphere, with Mr. Obama saying he is a great admirer of the pontiff. The president gave the Pope a box of fruit and vegetable seeds used in the White House garden. The Pope gave the president a small book, a papal document titled The Joy of the Gospel, which the president said he will turn to for strength. Later, at a news conference with Italy's prime minister, Mr. Obama spoke of his meeting with the pontiff.
My day started with the great honor of meeting His Holiness Pope Francis. And like people around the world, I've been incredibly moved by his compassion, his message of inclusion. I was grateful to have the opportunity to speak with him about the responsibilities that we all share to care for the least of these, the poor, the excluded.
The meeting was a chance for Mr. Obama to highlight the areas where they agree and to bridge relations strained by differences on a wide range of views and improve his image among observant American Catholic voters who see the administration as hostile to the church's teachings. Relations were damaged by the administration's efforts to force religious institutions and observant Catholics to pay for coverage of contraceptives, including abortion-inducing drugs and female sterilization under the new U.S. health care law, in violation of church teachings against abortion and contraception. Observant Catholics said the law trampled on their religious freedom. American bishops and followers who in some cases had supported the health care law condemned the requirements and joined in lawsuits to block its implementation. President Obama went into Thursday's meeting expecting to keep the conversation to areas where the two men agree. Pope Francis has spoken frequently against world poverty and inequality. Mr. Obama has called for bridging the gap between rich and poor and has led efforts to raise the minimum wage in the United States. Mr. Obama said the conversation was largely on these topics, but without going into detail, he indicated the Pope did bring up their differences.
His Holiness and the Vatican have been clear about their position on a range of issues. Some of them I differ with, most I heartily agree with.
They also spoke about immigration. And the president said the Pope raised concerns about the plight of Christians who are suffering persecution in the Middle East. Luis Ramirez, VOA News at the Vatican.
It's 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports news, we begin with cycling. Eritrea's Emmanuel Egerzeigza won the fourth and final stage of the Tour of Constantine in eastern Algeria on Thursday. Overall, Russia's Sergei Delik won the Tour of Constantine, the sixth event in the Grand Cycling Tour of Algeria. Today, Friday, focus shifts to the international circuit in the capital, Algiers. In volleyball, Egypt's El Ahly pipped Tunisian defending champion CS Sfaxien by 3-2 in a pulsating semi-final at the Africa Men's Volleyball Club Championships in Sousse, Tunisia on Thursday. In an all-Tunisian encounter, Esperance dismissed Etoile du Sahel in 3 straight sets in the other semi-final. Tomorrow Saturday, CS Sfaxien and Etoile du Sahel face off in the bronze medal playoff before El Ahly and Esperance clash in the finals. Turning to rugby, Kenya plays Sri Lanka as South Africa tackle France at the start of the seventh leg of the IRB Sevens series in Hong Kong, China today, Friday. Kenya will also face Wales, then Fiji in their Group A fixtures, while South Africa encounter Spain and Australia in Group B. South Africa lead the series standing with 116 points. Kenya is seventh with 57 points, while Zimbabwe is 18th with 1 point. Staying in Hong Kong, Zimbabwe and Tunisia are among 12 teams battling for promotion to the IRB World Core Series in a contest starting today, Friday. Zimbabwe play Barbados, then Chile and Russia in Group A, while Tunisia face Hong Kong before it playing Italy and American Samoa. Only one team gains promotion next year. Still in Hong Kong, South Africa play Papua New Guinea and Brazil in Group B at the IRB Women's Sevens Series starting today, Friday. In Group C, Kenya face France and China. Finally, in athletics, Eritrea's defending champion Zerzene Tadesa faces formidable Kenyan and Ethiopian challengers as he seeks an unprecedented sixth gold medal at the IAAF World Half Marathon Championships in Copenhagen, Denmark, tomorrow Saturday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a very good weekend, and we look forward to your report again on Monday. Here's our listener mail for this Friday morning, the 28th day of March.
I wish to call on the federal government of Nigeria to look into the several-month lingering strike of the polytechnic lecturers. The lecturers' problems should be solved to enable the students to go back to their classes. Education is the number one dividend of democracy for any voter or for any Nigerian in this country. Congress Patrick Okoro Graf, Oglo Premises, Hachuku, United States, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A former youth leader allegedly involved in the deadly violence that followed Ivory Coast 2010 election proclaimed his innocence on Thursday during his first appearance before the International Criminal Court. A smiling Charles Blaise Goudé told the court at The Hague that he did not expect to be convicted on charges of crimes against humanity. That's it for this Friday, March 28th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, our producer Jackson Vunganyi and engineer Nashran Kali, I'm James Bottis saying have a lovely weekend.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can't these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.